disappointing of that brand. Ports made in the house of the past that leads down to the den. She said, come with me. Okay.
Good morning. Solomon on Blast. We're back. We were out last week for the holidays, but we're back. I'm just going to get right into it. Sometimes there's things that you want to say and you just can't get everything organized right. Well, I found an article written by Daniel Greenfield on his blog called the Sultan Knish blog. He's a columnist that was born in Israel, lives in New York City, he's a fellow journalism fellow at David Horowitz Freedom Center. And he wrote this particular article, and I'm just going to cover some of the highlights on it real quick. It's called This Culture War We Are In, because that really is what Solomon on Blast is all about, the culture war that we're in. So I'll just get right into it so we can get moving here. So he starts out and he says, Americans believe in religion and family. The left sets out to destroy them by proving that these institutions are evil and oppressive. Religious leaders are pedophiles. The family is setting for abuse that make gay people feel bad. When the dust settles, the only good religion and family are the kind defined by the left. Having destroyed the existing system of organization, the left replaces it with its own. That is the ultimate goal of a culture war, not mere destruction, but absolute power. The culture war begins by attacking abstract ideas, then it attacks organizations, then it attacks people. By attacking the ideas, it undermines the organizations based on them so it can seize control of them or destroy them. Once that's done, it controls a sector of society and begins enforcing its conformity agenda on individuals. Much of that is underway. The war is drilling down to the individual level. We are approaching the tyranny threshold. At the individual level, the goal of the culture war is to destroy your will to resist them. The left has many tools for doing this. It will shame you. It will bully you. It will cause you to despair. It will convince you that your cause is hopeless. It will urge you to turn on each other. It will use your children against you. It will show you that what you believe in is a lie. It will make you question your sense of right and wrong. The most important thing to understand about this phase of the culture war is that it's the left's goal is to break you as an individual, to take away your values and to replace them with their own. If it cannot do these things, it will try to destroy you and even use you as a cautionary tale to warn others. This war may be fought with social media or in classrooms. It may be fought by bureaucrats with pens and by movie stars in front of cameras, but it's not all that different from a conqueror and his army of brutes riding into a village and enforcing his own rule of law. The forms are different, but the underlying dynamic is the same. We are being conquered, and we continue to resist. The left is not fighting this war as a war of ideas. It attacks the area of least resistance with whatever slogan or argument is most convenient at the time. Don't debate its ideas. Indict its hypocrisy. It mocks the values of others, but demands that it be that what is sacred to it be off limits. This is weakness. Don't defend your own values. Attack its values. You aren't the establishment. You lost. You're the rebels. Be rebellious. They are the owners. Wreck what they have without counting the cost. It needs the support of billion-dollar entertainment and media industries. Its community organizers need jobs with six-figure salaries. The left is destroying a civilization that cannot survive without it. It is an artificial entity that is weak and vulnerable in ways that the organic system it has declared war on, such as the family, are not. There are only two possible futures. Either the left will destroy itself or we will destroy it. The only question is the cost, the human cost of the struggle. We've already gotten a taste of the cost of their tyranny. It will get worse and worse. But resistance is not about simply winning the fights. It's about a struggle of the mind and a struggle of the soul. Winning is not always about beating the enemy. Sometimes it's about maintaining who you are despite it. It is about surviving in gulags and concentration camps. It's about passing on your value despite the totalitarian state growing around you. It's a spiritual resistance. It's a resistance of the mind. Above all else, maintain your own values and your own sense of wealth, self-worth in this conflict. The left cannot win until it has destroyed your morale. To win this war, it has to finish the job of breaking the society by destroying any sources of resistance. That's why it's so obsessed with destroying and controlling decentralized religious groups. You are a cultural guerrilla in a war you never chose. No one likes fighting guerrillas. They're hard to find. You can never set aside your worries and enjoy the spoils of victory when they're around, and the left wants to enjoy its spoils of victory. To destroy guerrillas, you have to hunt them all down or destroy their values, the things they value, and the hope that moves them forward and the goals they aim to achieve. The left is good at tearing down a culture. but its swath of destruction creates cultural guerrillas who carry their culture with them. When those men and women form families and communities, they become the counterculture, and the final phase of this culture war will be between them and the left. A culture war is a war of values. It's a war of worth. The left seeks to destroy you by degrading the things that you value. It is our task to outlive it. If we cannot defeat it, it is our job to maintain our culture against its attacks, and our mission to expose it for what it is, phantom made up of a million excuses for power. Its weapon is destroy everything that gives us a sense of worth, because it is a thing of no worth. It has nothing. We have everything. If activists are a zombie army trying to fill their maws with something by destroying us because they have nothing, they will always have nothing. The left isn't strong. It's weak. It isn't moral. It's completely amoral. It isn't replacing our culture with something better. It's replacing it with an engine for destroying our culture. And once it's done, it'll collapse. Our family is our army. Our religion and our convictions are our organization. Our mind is our weapon. Our battle is keeping these alive. Every battle we win organizes us and builds us into a movement. We will defeat the system by keeping our families and our faith. We'll destroy the system by refusing to be controlled by it. We are not planning a revolution. Our lives are the revolution. And as Solomon says, fools mock at sin, but among the upright, there is favor. Let's take advantage of that favor. We'll be back with more of Solomon on Blast right after this commercial. All right, we're back with Solomon on Blast. I don't know if you go to San Francisco, you want to wear flowers in your hair or bulletproof vest from now on by the looks of it. So, yeah, big story this past.
Things have changed a lot since the Summer of Love.
Yeah, definitely. This story just keeps on getting worse and worse as you look at the details of the shooting there in San Francisco. And the latest piece of that is, and this came out just yesterday, that the San Francisco police didn't even investigate the gun theft before the killing occurred. It was a gun that belonged to a Bureau of Land Management employee, and it had been stolen out of
his
vehicle.
Which would have been a federal, right?
It's a federal position, and it was stolen out of his vehicle, and the police didn't even get around to investigating it. It says that it was a break-in occurred on June 27th. It was reported to police, and it hadn't been assigned to an inspector by the time Catherine Steinle was killed along the Embarcadero on July 1st. So it just seems like the approach to by the left of how they deal with problems keeps getting worse and worse.
Well, this is one story I think I have at least the right to comment on, because I lived there for 7 years and lived around there for many years before that. So I will say that the San Francisco city government, even within San Francisco, really is a bit of a joke. And what I mean is that the things that they concentrate on, Doug, have to make you laugh. For example, they outlawed Happy Meals a few years ago, you know. They didn't want us or people, you know, having their children given a toy for eating bad food. And so they made a law about that. Shopping carts for the homeless. The carts that you get at Safeway. And so I guess Safeway and those stores were donating dented ones. And somebody stood up and said, well, that's not fair. So they actually bought brand new ones for homeless people that wanted to push a shopping cart down the street. And so you get a bunch of this kind of legislative action, and after a while, you start to wonder, what are they even doing? You know, they're inventing new ways to be silly. And I don't know what else to say. And that's funny until something like this happens. And you realize, and here's the question I have, are these super liberal city governments becoming a liability to their citizens and to their visitors?
I think they are, because there's laws on the books that are supposed to address these kind of things. But in reality, laws don't protect anybody at all. They only give the state, the government, a basis for defining what is legal and what isn't, and defining the punishment or the consequences for violating that laws. So all the law is based on the belief that the person living there, the citizens, will be afraid of the consequences of violating the law and won't do it.
Yeah, most of those kinds of laws, you know, these big statements are just hot air. We know that.
Right.
They're just pontificating some position, posturing for maybe a constituency. For example, another funny one is Berkeley, California has signs all throughout the city, just across the bay, that says we are a nuclear-free zone, which, if, number one, is not even true. I used to work for a company that had a contract in a hospital, and one of the things that they were working on was the nuclear medicine machine. So that's not even true. But number two, what are they saying? They're saying that somehow by making this big statement, a warhead that's coming over from North Korea is going to read the sign and take a sharp turn east toward Dallas because they like guns over there, and they deserve that bomb. I mean, that's ridiculous. It's just that they would even waste city money on making that sign. You know, the contract is ridiculous.
Right.
I mean, how do they get away with that? I mean, come on. Putting a sign up, and you know, I don't care if the contract was $2,500. It's just stupid that they would even dedicate any thought toward that at all. But basically, Berkeley, of course, is where the University of California is. But the whole Bay Area is run by college campus type city governments, you know?
And the problem I have with this is that they don't look beyond their noses in terms of the consequences of the laws that they put in place. Those kind of things, there's really no impact, you know, and I'm sure they're out there chasing down the criminal grocery cart people. But then you have laws that, like this, that the sanctuary city approach and everything that have consequences, serious consequences,
right.
But they don't want to look at it from that aspect. Further down the road of what are the consequences? What are the possible effects of somebody who comes here knowing specifically that it's a sanctuary city? It's kind of like walking into, you know, the local post office that, you know, people aren't allowed to have guns in there, or the federal building, and knowing that, okay, nobody's going to be able to stop me if I want to do something.
Right, and to size it up another way, is it fair to suggest that their policies invite, these policies of these liberal governments invite rogue elements? Do they invite them into their cities?
I think it does, because when you know, okay, do you go... Do you speed where you know the speed traps are set up? Absolutely not. This city's had speed traps set up all over the place. The county did it too. Every time you knew where the speed trap was, you slowed down enough to get through the speed trap, and then you went back to speeding. Like I said, not me, but I mean, some people would. I just kept speeding all the way. The laws aren't going to stop anybody from doing anything. The law that said, you know, I couldn't go over 45 miles an hour doesn't stop me from going over 45 miles an hour if I choose not to.
Yeah, there's no question that these policies are not lost on the loiterers and perpetrators of the world. Back to San Francisco, it was late 90s, early 2000s. Everybody knew that you could get a check, and not me, but you know, people that you would know. It was common knowledge. A person could get $400 a month general assistance by just getting a general post office at the any post office in the city. So
a
I mean,
PO box?
$400 a month
just by having a PO
just
box?
Showing up, man. I mean, you're just inviting. Yeah, you don't even have to have a PO box. You can just get general delivery, and you could get a welfare check. And all these guys would line up in front of the post. One time I was downtown, and I asked somebody, "What's this all about?" Big line around the post office. They said everyone's collecting their $400 check. And so you're getting people from all over the country literally being vacuumed in, you know,
right,
to live on the streets and in Golden Gate Park with these kinds of policies. And to say that you're not bringing in with them all these other kind of social challenges is, man, it's absolutely ridiculous. And then you add to that the sanctuary city, where we're not going to deport illegal immigrants. And, you know, you're asking for all kinds of other other problems.
And this isn't the first time this has happened in San Francisco. There was a similar case back in 2008. I don't know if people remember that.
Oh, yeah, I remember the Bologna family.
They tried to sue the city for liability in the shooting because of their laws, but the judge actually ended up dismissing that suit, noting, and this was a statement, that cities generally are not liable for failing to protect individuals against crime. And the San Francisco district attorney at that time, Kamala Harris, declined to pursue the death penalty in the case despite the heavy public pressure, owing to her campaign pledge to refrain from advocating for capital punishment. So here's a guy, he kills three people.
Yeah, I remember the story.
Campaign promise, she's not going to go after the death penalty.
He was a little MS-13 gangster.
Absolutely.
Here illegally.
Right.
And he summarily murdered, a cold blood gangster style, I think a dad and his two sons.
Right.
Correct?
Yeah. And, there were three sons in the car. Two of them were killed along with the father.
And so if Kamala Harris had such great conviction, why didn't she just resign her position and say, I can't do this?
Well, she's now California.
Yeah, because that's California, you know.
Yeah, instead she got elected to be California's attorney general now, and it's nice to know that she's also running for Nancy Pelosi's Senate seat out of that district, or for the state there.
Well, so, she certainly is qualified in terms of how they think. Here's one of the things that I had read that is a challenge to this position, that people say, well, these are just common problems to densely populated areas anywhere, whether no matter what their city government positions are, this is just a problem for urban areas in general, and it's hard to assess it this way. What do you think about that, Doug?
I don't think that's the case. There, like I said, people go through the path of least resistance, and like you said, the street people know where those paths of least resistance are. They're not foolish enough to go commit the crime in front of the police station. They're going to go find the areas where they can get away with it. And when you have these kind of policies in place, it just invites them in without any kind of concern about there being consequences associated with it.
Yeah, you know, also what I think refutes that position anyway is when we consider Rudy Giuliani's administration in New York City. I think he had as tough a challenge, probably there's never been a tougher challenge in all of America to clean up an urban area than in Manhattan in New York City, and what he did with Times Square, throwing out all the, you know,
right,
all the porno shops and bringing in Disney and making the city cleaning it up and making it a place you want to be. You know, we all remember New York City, the reputation of it, New York in the 70s. It was horrible.
Yeah, he started prosecuting the misdemeanor crimes because it's the broken window syndrome in a building, right?
Right.
That window's broken. Somebody's going to go, well, nobody fixed that one. I'll go along and break the next one. And if you don't address things, even at the misdemeanor level, then it's open to everything you want.
So Rudy Giuliani had to empower the police force.
Right.
And I don't mean in some inordinate way, but he certainly had to allow them to do their job, to clean that place up. And it looked impossible. Remember, New York City was on the brink of bankruptcy.
Yep.
And it was to every... Just look at any film made about New York City in the 70s. And it's all urban blight and, you know, crime,
right,
and, you know,
nobody would ever
Serpico
go there.
And, you know, all kinds of, everybody's corrupt. And then, you know, what he did with that city is absolutely amazing. But let's make no bones about it. He did it. What he did because he cracked down and he tightened it up. And he said, no, we can't be silly.
Right.
We have too many people here to be silly. You know, we can't worry about shopping carts right now. What we got to worry about is cleaning this place up.
Now, the worst thing is the next morning after the shooting, there was a news crew out in that exact same area at about 6 in the morning, and they were starting to do a news report, and three guys in masks and everything came and beat one of the news reporters with a pistol, whipped him, and stole their camera equipment. This is in the exact same place that this murder took place, and here's three more criminals showing up to steal camera equipment from the news media.
I mean, a completely unrelated crime in one sense.
But they knew they were going to be there, most likely, because obviously
That's brazen when the people actually have a camera, but I guess it's in on the other side of it. If, as long as you steal that camera, I guess you're going to be okay.
Right. I mean, they did get some video, but they had masks on, so they knew that as long as they kept their face covered, they'd be all right.
I mean, and actually, I saw the story. I was looking for the video of it. I never did see it. But it's crazy, but that's exactly what you're dealing with. And again, having lived there and really talked to many different people from a different cross-section of life, talking to people that have had, you know, ex-criminals, they made it very clear. They said, if you're going to do your dirt, and this is somebody's quote, if you're going to do your dirt, do it in San Francisco. Don't do it in San Mateo County, or you do it in Oakland, or you do it in San Francisco. You do it in Alameda County or San Francisco County. Don't mess with, you know, Contra Costa County, San Mateo County, because if you do that, they're going to come down hard on you. So they know exactly. They knew exactly where to operate, because these people, in fact, do invite the rogue elements. I don't care. You know, they pretend that it's all because they're so diverse and tolerant and all that. They're silly. To me, that's the only issue that I'm dealing with, that they're intoxicated with silliness, trying to, you know, fall over each other, trying to out-tolerate each other. And what they're actually doing is making these cities, these beautiful. San Francisco is, to me, still the most beautiful city in America. And they're turning these places into very dangerous places to be.
And all those
homeless people don't make it smell very good either.
No. And the worst thing about this also is that they had him in custody. They released him. And he's out roaming the streets all because of their little policy that is brazenly in opposition to the federal laws. But when other places, like maybe Arizona, want to enforce things through things like SB 1070, we're getting sued by the federal government for standing up against their foolish laws, and yet San Francisco can create foolish laws and thumb their nose at the federal government with immunity, it seems like. Why isn't the federal government coming down on them for this kind of stuff? I don't know. But it's almost time for a break, so we'll be back with more of Solomon on Blast right after this.
Is this the real life? Is this just fantasy? Caught in a landslide, no escape from reality. Look up to the skies and see. I'm just a cool boy. I need no sympathy. Because I'm easy come, easy go. Little high, little low. Anyway, the wind blows doesn't really matter.
All right, we're back with Solomon on Blast. Well, I don't think he's a poor boy by any means, but Donald Trump is definitely making waves out there. And like they said in the news break during the commercial there, he's up in Phoenix. They had to move from his original location at a resort to the Phoenix Convention Center because he's got a lot of people out there that seem to think what he's saying is pretty good. Well, I look at what Solomon says about this. He says, This has to do with the problems of dealing with looking for false gods, adultery. He says, remove your way far from her and do not go near the door of her house, lest you have give your honor to others and your years to the cruel one, lest aliens be filled with your wealth and your labors go to the house of a foreigner. So that's kind of what Donald's talking about. He's saying that everything we're doing is giving our wealth to the aliens and our houses to the foreigners. What do you think, Fred, in terms of his approach?
This is, you know, I'll tell you, for the record, let me just say this, just for the record.
Okay.
I personally believe that a worker program should have been worked out going all the way back to George W. Bush. And
Ronald Reagan?
I mean, a program should have been worked out. And the Republicans complain a lot about what's going on, but they had the opportunity to do something about it, and they didn't do it. They just fumbled the issue away, which once it got out of their hands, of course, it was going to become a completely different animal. And that's what we're dealing with today. So they had a chance to deal with it, and they didn't deal with it. They didn't let George W. Bush deal with it. He wanted to. So I think that there's nothing you're going to do. You're not going to turn this around. I do believe in the border security and all of that. But having said that, I think that Donald Trump must be a serious candidate because of the firestorm that he's drawing. He didn't seem like a serious candidate, and I'm judging by the firestorm that he's receiving from all of this, because lots of people say different things about this issue, and, you know, they get a pass or it goes away, but he's being targeted in such a way that maybe he's a real threat, Doug.
Well, my question is he really presidential material? Because one inflammatory issue doesn't make you a good president.
Well, they say a good candidate should have a lot of hair, and so that should make him a really good candidate.
Well, that part of it, yeah. Maybe that aspect of it. But I go back to it. Is one inflammatory issue really make him a good president? And is it right? Is it going to be that way when he gets in the White House that he just goes around and spouts off and then he's got to correct what he says? I can't disagree with him on the fact that, yes, just like Cuba did with the opening their prisons and sending the boat people here, sending the worst of Cuba's criminals to the U.S., Mexico does the same thing in general. There are people that come here that have criminal backgrounds, obviously, in a number of ways, but that's not the majority of them, obviously. And I know that was really what his point he was trying to make there, but it did cause quite a controversy. I'm wondering, is he really that good of a candidate?
Though? I don't know. I think he's going to resonate with I don't know what, you know, if he's just this supersized ego that he appears to be on television. Apparently he is, but the point I think that makes him effective is that the American people are in a place of desperation. Now let's go back to this midterm election. All these Republicans were elected in landslides, not because I think America's in love with the Republican Party. I think basically it was America sending up the bat signal saying, somebody help us. Somebody get involved here. You know, there was a desperation to that, I think. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, to them, they go back and apparently it's business as usual. They didn't see the bat signal of it. So a guy like Donald Trump could really resonate right now with that kind of national mood, I believe. And for better or for worse, I think it makes him a legitimate contender.
Well, you've made the comments in the past that, especially with regards to maybe some of the Hollywood people, that just because they've got a lot of money doesn't make them smart, right? So I asked the question back at you with this one. Just because he has a lot of money doesn't make him that smart, does it?
Well,
he's kind of hanging with the Hollywood crowd by saying,
do you need to be that smart to be president anymore?
That is a sad point to make, that maybe it's all about your ability to draw the people, because
I mean they're smart enough, I guess that's right. What I would say, I don't necessarily think
financially the guy's definitely smart. He knows how to handle business, the art of the deal. Well, my question is, what's the deal that he's got going right now? What is the deal that he's working?
Well, the his ability to get a project completed, you know, his mm-hmm. famous story about the skating rink in New York City that kind of elevated him to some kind of national status. This man probably does have the ability to put that fence up.
Probably so.
And
get the Mexicans to pay for it, because that's what he said he was going to do, right? He was going to get the Mexicans to pay for it.
Yeah. So I think he could just one act, let me put it this way, answering one promise alone will give him all kinds of credibility with the electorate. Let me give you an example. When I was living in California, getting back to San Francisco, Gray Davis had the state in all kinds of problems. I mean, they had rolling blackouts in all the cities at the time, and they called them grayouts.
Uh-huh.
And so from there, the people rose up and said, this guy took a surplus of probably, I'm you know, I think the story was 30 million, 300 million or whatever, and he reversed it. Exactly, you know, now they're in debt, and the guy tripled. You know what Gray Davis did? He tripled your car registration of the whole state overnight by dictate.
Right.
Just like Fidel Castro. I now say, and so that's what got him recalled. And Arnold Schwarzenegger promised. He said, if I'm elected, I'm going to reverse this, and I'm going to give you every California their money back.
And that,
I can sit here and say no politician has ever, ever come through with any promise like that other than Arnold Schwarzenegger. So I don't know what kind of governor he was, but I know he put he reduced my
car registration. He gave you back your car registration.
Gave me $600-something back.
From the one that stole it from you. Well,
I mean, that kind of stuff really means something to the average voter.
Well,
more than you think.
Yeah, and there was a comment that that Donald made that he wasn't worried about his business at this point in time. He's more concerned about getting the country back to the country that we used to know and have. But I have to also ask, is that the case, or is he just part of the establishment that, you know, he's out there actually drawing a lot of fire for all the other candidates that allow them to look even better, right?
Well, yeah. Well, his opening statement, I'm really rich.
Yeah.
I think it's very meaningful. I think what he's saying is, I'm not working for George Soros like the current president is.
Or
I'm not working for the old country club, you know, establishment.
He's not
like all these other candidates have to go there with hat in hand and answer to these people continuously. He said, he's basically saying, I don't have to bow down to all those forces that are causing these people to be such, you know, really such liabilities in our system.
Because I did see an article that said that Jeb Bush had raised $114 million from one super PAC. So maybe that's his point is, I don't have to go out there to these super PACs to be able to fund my campaign. I can manage it on my own.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that makes him a real wild card. Now, I'm not saying that I trust the guy. They blame him for destroying the USFL, by the way. There's a 30-30 on ESPN that suggests that much. But I'm not saying that this guy is the answer. I'm just saying he seems to me, based on all that's going on, that he's a legitimate candidate because of the impact that he's making in a way that he would not have seemed legitimate had he not put himself into this situation. I do want to say one thing. That him being characterized as a racist, I just think is a slur. I don't think he's a racist. I don't think he's even suggesting that. And here's the thing that just kills me, Doug. Especially, when I consider these things, that the people there was an article. Let me just refer to it in the Washington Post.
The
fact checker of the Washington Post. And she suggests that, you know, it challenges all these statistics on immigrants and crime, and that he's just making stuff up. See, but what people need to know is that she didn't make a distinction. The woman who wrote this article did not make a distinction between illegal aliens, immigrants, and legal immigrants.
Right.
And I don't know. We can talk more about that
after
when we come
back. Yeah. So we got to take a break. We'll be back with more Solomon on Blast right after this quick break. All right, we're back with more Solomon on Blast. We'll continue with kind of where we left off. So the fact-checking with regards to Donald's statement seemed to indicate that maybe Donald wasn't completely telling the truth when he made his an original announcement back in the middle of June for his presidential campaign, that they do a fact-check, they see how much of it's real, how much of it's a lot of baloney. And like any of the candidates, they're going to say things that people want to hear. But this particular lady indicated that his comments with regards to illegal immigration were off base. And she had numbers that said that they weren't as bad as what Donald was saying.
And so, again, getting back to that article, you realize that what she's doing is she's using all immigrants, illegal
and legal.
So she's combining the whole idea that he's attacking immigrants in general, making no distinction between whether they're documented or not, which to me is huge. It's absolutely huge distinction. It's night and day as to where the criminal element would be. For one thing, just let me say this. It doesn't matter what your ethnicity is or your nationality. You get a bunch of unaccountable young men together of any group where they don't know your name, they don't know who you are, they don't know where you come from. The chances of that group causing lots of trouble are really high. Those are basic statistics. That's why so many people in that group end up in prison in general. I don't care what ethnicity you're talking about.
Right. So, we've seen it right here in Tucson after basketball games. If those people are down there and can be anonymous, they can turn cars over, start fires, and everything else.
So to understand that that same tendency would carry over to an illegal alien population is really not a slur at all. It's just simply saying you got all these unaccounted for young men free and roaming. You're asking for serious social trouble there. That's why I think we need a document worker program. You need to find out who everybody is.
And Jake has been hanging out with us here. So
it's great to see you guys. I love your show so much. Yeah, good morning.
We're just kind of doing Jake. The whole everybody merges from one show to the next this morning.
It feels great. The question I have for you guys is, you know, Trump, August 6th is the first debate, okay? And they have a plethora of candidates. I think some of the...
A plethora.
Some of the candidates that I'd
like
to...
It's like a herd.
Yeah, well, they're already saying there's like the adult table and the kid table, right?
Oh,
I mean,
okay,
you know,
yeah.
And I say to myself, I mean, who... And, you know, who really... I mean, Scott Walker, Rand Paul, I don't see these cats taking him on. I guess what I'm saying is, no matter what you think about his statements, I mean, flip-flopping is the new norm in politics.
Right.
It doesn't matter anymore, really. I mean, everybody has, and I think it's okay. You evolve as a person, you change your mind. You know, say what you will, but he's going to get traction from that debate no matter what.
Oh yeah,
I think this is a fascinating situation where you have a guy who is self-financed. He has a tremendous amount of arrogance. He also has been successful. So, I mean, I ask both of you, what do you think is going to come out of that? Is somebody going to actually embarrass him and put him away? Or is he going to shine and get another 2 months of traction out of this?
Well, that's a great question, because right now is an all-out attempt to embarrass him based on his own quirky personality
By the left media. None of the candidates have taken him on. None of them in a serious way,
but they've apologized and they've postured themselves over the immigration.
McCain won't even use his name. McCain won't even. McCain's like, it's not. Well, I mean, it's like they're scared of him. You know?
The head of the RNC called them and actually gave him a little bit of a congratulatory response, but also said,
"Go away."
might want to tone it down a little bit, but I don't think Donald Trump toned anything down.
It's the straight talk that people are hungry for. Whether you like, I'm not offended by that talk, but getting back to this story about the immigration, the difference between a legal immigrant and an illegal immigrant is huge to people that are here legally.
Absolutely,
families who came legally. Now, on my mother's side of the family, her parents came over like in 1915, just from Sonora, down the other side.
Mm-hmm.
In 1915, but everything was, you know, they were Americans, they became citizens. They had the mentality was, we're here, we join, and they are very proud of their culture, they never let that go, but they still understood that that's the way to do it, and that's what you were taught about life,
I
want to
ask you a question, though.
And that's
because,
the majority, I think.
Because a lot of Latino, I find that I think one of the things that is so hotly contested about the debate is that Americans don't see Latinos assimilating.
Right.
Okay? They are very proud of their culture.
Right.
They're very proud of these things.
Sure.
Personally, okay, I like that. I want people to know where their roots are.
But that's always been the case.
Well,
Germans,
that's what you were saying about your family when they came here. They kept that culture.
Yeah.
But somehow they assimilated as well. Now, like, my wife is Chinese. The Chinese are very good at assimilating. I mean, they don't have 8 kids they're only making 7. I mean, I hate to paint with broad brushes.
Yeah, no,
I understand what you're saying. Like, you just basically said that your folks never compromised their culture, but they came here and assimilated. And yet I think that seems to rub some white Americans the wrong way because they say these people are not a citizen. So just take it away.
Well, Jay, here's where the difference. This is why I'm so hung up on this distinction between legal and illegal. People, I'm talking about my mother's parents that came 100 years ago. Mm-hmm. Well, they weren't people weren't, saying, we're going to do this and do that and do this, and all the politicians are posturing, trying to use you. Yeah. So these people had to work real hard. My grandfather worked in the mines in Bisbee, Arizona, and sent all of his kids to college. All of them. I mean, they didn't support him financially the whole way, but I mean, they supported 8 kids back then. So what we're talking about is there was an ingenuity, a sense of pride, but they never lost their culture. But here's the difference. Sure. Today in politics, people cannot tell the difference. And I say this about progressives with a broad brush. Uh-huh. They cannot tell the difference between a legal immigrant and an illegal one. That's a very insulting idea to people that do this correctly.
I agree.
You know, to them,
because if they had to do that, then they'd have to admit that these people are breaking the law and are in violation of our immigration laws.
On the other side, you can say progressives, but the big business in this country, they bring in those young men who don't have any structure. They want to build casinos for cheap, so they get them to come in, and then there's no job after 6 months. So of course they're going to commit. I mean, I guess,
or they're going to go back.
But I really, before we go, I want to be able to go back to the tape and play this. Give me your predictions about how the fallout from that first debate, because that is at this point what we've become in our country is this must-see TV, and that is what this has become. Will Trump still be – will someone surprise us and take some shots at him and take him down, or will he still be very relevant after that?
I'm going to answer this real quickly, and I'll give it to Doug. Number one, just getting back to the – just let me finish my point.
Sure.
Trump is right about illegal alien crime. He's right about that. I talked to a guy here in the federal prison system, unofficial. He told me out of one section, 1,700 plus inmates, 800 of them are illegal aliens. 800 here in Tucson.
5%.
And the federal prisons do not reflect local population, by the way. Right. They got people all over the country. So it's true. About illegal aliens, it is true what he's saying. Now, because when they bunch them together... So here to answer your question, what I say, if he can make that distinction clearly, survive this storm, and straight talk Americans through the first debate, he's going to be a dangerous candidate. That's what I think.
And I think that may be the case. The problem I have is it's like you said, it's sensationalistic TV.
That's
and
what
Donald's very good at it. The Apprentice was all about sensationalistic TV. The question I would have is the left is very much in support of the Hollywood groups and everything else. And when you start looking at some of these articles, they make Donald out to be this Hollywood icon, right, in terms of his show. He's a reality TV star. And you know conservatives don't like reality TV stars. That isn't really the approach that...
But the base does.
Works
the
well.
Base seems to. And here's the thing, I want to.
Secular people do, but the Christian base probably isn't so keen on.
Well,
the
I don't think they're
reality.
The. I think they're the. I just look at it and I say.
And they are, but they are the swing vote side of things.
But there's also that strand of the base that really admires Donald because he did it himself. He came from nothing, built himself into it, and so those people, they're hardworking people. They say, I want to be that person. The thing is, it's not about the Democrats. Who in that Republican Party is going to actually try to take him on? Because otherwise, he's going to take it. Someone's got to step up.
I would have to say there's nobody in the Republican Party candidate group that's going to be willing to expose themselves.
I mean, I would have said Chris Christie, but he's damaged goods now.
Yeah, I don't think anybody's there that's going to expose themselves to the flack of the media the way Donald is, and they won't be able to survive that flack. Donald, the only thing that's going to take Donald down is probably the media really hammering him hard enough and with everything that they can throw at him,
sure.
But I don't think it's going to work. But all the rest of the candidates, they're going to keep their heads down when the fire starts.
I love Solomon on Blast, by the way. Tune in every Saturday at 11 o'clock, all right?
Thank you, Jake.
Thanks,
Jake. I love your voice. I was. It almost sounds like we need Coltrane playing underneath every time you talk.
Not with talking about Trump, though.
No. All right. So that's kind of where things are at this week for Solomon on Blast. We appreciate Jake coming in and throwing in some of the controversy here, talking about it, and the opportunity to hang out a little bit with Dave at the end of his show. Jake Feinberg's coming up next, and he'll be having his usual array of interesting interviews and who knows what else. So until next week, don't forget, think wisely. We need it.
Great, man. Thanks for jumping in.